Moncrief on News Talk.
The thing is not the benefit. The money's not my $100,000 to pay off Mancuso. Jake, tell me you've got my money or I'll kill you right before they kill me.
It's not that
Are you
bad.
Joking?
I just don't have all the money, right? I had to square the books.
Jake, hang on a second. What are you talking about? Square the books? What does that mean? How is that my problem?
For sake, it's all going to be fine.
What's this?
It's going to be fine.
What is this? What do you mean it's going to be fine? It was fine. This is $16,000. I don't need $16,000. I need $100,000, Jake. I told them they were going to get the whole thing.
There you go. That's the Bear meets Goodfellas. Black Rabbit, it's called. You can stream the entire series now on Netflix. James Dempsey is with us once again. Afternoon, James. Why were those two men so upset in that clip?
Yeah, the grizzly bear is what I was saying. Yeah, right. So there we have Jude Law doing his best-ish American accent and Jason Bateman as brothers Jake and Vince Friedkin, who are a pair of brothers with a checkered history. And one of them, Vince, the elder one, Jason Bateman, has a substance abuse problem that has led him to leave their shared business, which is the titular Black Rabbit, which is like a pub / fine dining restaurant / VIP club for New York City high rollers / dingy but yet cool and everything, right?
Okay. Covering a lot there.
Indeed. Well, that's what this show really does. And we meet first Jake, who's running the bar, that's Jude Law, talking about how anything can happen in the Black Rabbit at night, to then have two masked assailants break in and try and steal a bunch of jewels that are there for reasons that are reasons. And it then flashes back in time to maybe a month before, and we see the arrival of his brother Vince. Now, in their youth, they kind of, in addition to having a checkered youth, they went on to form a sort of Nirvana-esque band, and that was their first foray into success. But when that fell apart, they put their money into this restaurant and are building that. And after Jake is forced to, after Vince is forced to leave, Jake wants to take over this other places, other very well-known shishi, super chic New York eatery called The Pool, which I think is fictional rather than real. And he's all in on trying to get that, right? So we have these two different narratives. We have Jake trying to take over this place while dealing with his brother, who's this eternal mess, always causing problems, and who is running from various gambling debts, most of which come in the form of Troy Kotsur. He's best known as the father in Coda, for which he won Best Supporting Actor. His second turn in recent weeks, where he plays a gambling gangster type.
Yeah.
Strong's Island type, so to speak, who sends his son and his son's sort of friend off to do bits of violence. Now, all in, that actually sounds fine. But where is the link to the bear? Well, this is as much a drama about the restaurant business as it is about running from your addiction and gambling debts. And really, when I say it is a, like, they throw the kitchen sink at this, every possible potential plot thread is explored to perhaps a flaw, right? As in, they're trying to do far, far too much, in my opinion, in this season. Now, unlike The Bear, which is lots of people shouting at each other, but like at the heart of it is heart, so
yes,
to speak, right?
Yeah.
They all really love each other and they're all willing each other on to be successes and to reach the pinnacle of cooking, etc. This is about people who absolutely fundamentally loathe each other, right? And who are miserable. And the more you get into it, like, it's just a constant stream of misery, I will say, right?
Oh, dear. Now,
we get the two main brothers, and they are excellent, I will say. Like, Jude Law, I thought, was very mercurial as Jake, as this kind of smiling charmer, but really, does he have a heart of gold? He absolutely does not. Even better is Jason Bateman. Now, he is here in Ozark form, right? We've seen him do this kind of thing before.
Okay, but it sounds even flakier than Ozark.
Agreed, yeah. He's playing a crustier version of himself with sort of mid-length hair and an ill-advised beard. But like, if you think of his career, like, he started ultimately as a child star in the 80s. I think he was in like Teen Wolf 2 or whatever that, you know.
Oh, right.
He started off there and then was in sitcoms, and then he obviously broke it big again then in the early 2000s in Arrested Development, where he essentially played the straight man, making the sardonic quips against the other kind of pantomime members of the Bluth family. And here he is you know, fast talking, full of one-liners that you could see him doing. So that kind of comedic training has trained him well. But he's also a very accomplished director. He directed lots of episodes of Ozark. He won an Emmy for that. And he directs the first two episodes of this and convinced his Ozark wife, Laura Linney, of many other things, to direct two of the eight of them as well. So there is big pedigree attached to this. And that is the kind of area where Netflix is really sort of pouring its creative, you know, juices, for want of a better term, right? In the sense that they know that the miniseries, and this is a one and done thing, right? This is eight episodes only. Okay. It comes to a conclusion at the end, that they can get prestige talent on board with this because it's a bit awards baity for them. It has been in terms of, you know, Baby Reindeer, in terms of other things in that vein, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, All In, is this going to be awards baity? I don't know. Ultimately, I think I did like it, even though I found it kind of bruising to watch because each episode, one after another, after another is just, it's sort of like, you know, in Curb Your Enthusiasm, where everything is going wrong for Larry. Like, literally, everything is going wrong for these guys.
And there's never a leavening moment where,
yes and no, but I would say not enough, right? Yeah. As in, you know, for a show about a restaurant, they have not kind of balanced the flavors here particularly well. And it is grim stuff. Now, it is punctuated by these moments of violence that sort of come out of nowhere that are incredibly shocking and edge of your seat stuff, in the sense that they are shot really thrillingly. I mean, it happens in the first episode with a car scene. It happens in the second episode with, I'm going to say, a hand scene. It happens throughout the show, but mostly centered around Jason Bateman's Vince. And really, he, I think, is of all of them the star of this vehicle. Now, because the two brothers are the main plot thread of the entire thing, everyone else is a bit on the sideline, shall we say. And because I said Netflix is attracting the creme de la creme to this kind of project, the sidelines are quite, you know, really, really very valuable actors who get absolutely nothing to do, particularly Sopé Dirisu, who's probably best known for Gangs of London. He plays this British investor in the bar who's a musician who literally gets nothing to do. Cleopatra Coleman is his wife, who's the designer. I mean, designer. It's like this dingy place. Like, it looks like a Dublin pub, to be honest with you, or whatever, right? She gets very little to do, even less. Amaka Okafor, I'm not familiar with her, but she's the chef. Roxy, nothing to do. Very good, actually, is Abby Lee. She's an Australian model turned actress. She plays the barmaid, Anna, who is excellent. Dagmara Dominicic, who you'd know from many, many things, including The Lost Daughter, Succession. She gets very little to do. Everyone is sidelined. When Morgan Spector, who's probably best known as like Train Daddy from the Gilded Age, right? When he shows up, I was like, okay, who the hell is he? And he has like about five scenes. He's a fixer, so to speak. Nothing to do, right? It's all focused on these two brothers and the chaotic relationship between them, which means instead of being 8 hours, it should have been 4 hours, because really we could have sidelined half of the story, which really brings us nowhere into the main cut and thrust of the story. But when it is good, it's very good. It's just that it's also very miserable.
It sounds very intense. Not a show to binge then. Maybe kind of watch one and give yourself a bit of a break.
I petered out, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Our next show is Gen V. New episodes of season 2 every Wednesday on Amazon Prime Video. Here's a clip.
Having powers, it's incredibly complicated. And super physiology has had to adapt and evolve beyond all reasonable expectations of what a body should be able to do.
So if we know how our powers work, then what?
Well, then you move up the rankings. And I cannot overemphasize the importance of the rankings. You see that button right there? Today's exercise is incredibly simple. All you have to do is push that button, and the class ends. And you've got to get through Vicor to do it. Good luck!
There you go. That's Gen V, which of course is a spin-off from The Boys.
Yeah.
Does it have the same kind of sensibility as The Boys in that let's be as gross as we can possibly be?
I would say definitely. And this second season opens with a scene of, so that this one takes place at a university called Godalkin U, or God U, very on the nose. And it opens with the origins of Godalkin, which are as bloody and visceral as you would expect in The Boys franchise. Now, what I find ironic about The Boys is that obviously in some degrees it's a satire of the entire kind of Marvel cinematic universe. And yet now we're in the third show in its own own little mini universe, and because it is so successful, I mean, is a movie off the cards? Probably not, right? As in, it could easily, you know, in some ways it is becoming what it once mocked. Now, what I do like about it is ironic, it is tongue-in-cheek, it is violent, it is bloody and gruesome and all that kind of stuff, in a very, very cartoonish way, despite being live action. And it understands how to play with the tropes of what it's going with. This time, but, and I also have to admire actually what they've done this time round on account of the fact that a lot of their plans had to be changed very suddenly. So an actor in the first season, Chance Perdomo, he actually passed away in a motorcycle accident on his way to the production. And the first time the cast heard of it, according to the Hollywood Reporter, was at what was supposed to be a table read of the first script of the first episode. And they then obviously went on hiatus while they figured out what they were going to do and basically had to re-establish what they were going to do and build that around his death in the most tasteful way that you possibly can. And
for a show that isn't tasteful.
In a show that isn't tasteful, what is the most tasteful thing you can do is not recast him and have him die off screen, which is what they've done here. Now, this season sees our main heroes. They are Jazz Sinclair's Marie Moreau, who at least has kind of a novel power set, because, you know, when it comes to superheroes, we've seen a lot of the same things. Often it's strongman pushes and punches thing, or flies and lasers, etc. Her power is the ability to control blood. So she's often cutting her own palm to release it and deploy it as a weapon, so to speak. We have Lizzie Broadway's Emma Meyer, who is able to shrink and grow large in equal measure. Maddie Phillips is Kate, who's the kind of one who's able to read minds and influence your thoughts. And then the most interesting one maybe is Jordan Lee, who is I can't exactly remember the term they used in the show, but able to swap gender, not trans, but sort of bi-gender, I think is what they were saying, played one in by London Thor as a female and Derek Liu as a male, with different power sets. Now, it is a college superhero show, which means it is like, you know, a smaller scale than The Boys, which is obviously about a psychotic, crazy superhero. Yeah. Superman or evil.
Do they refer to that word?
Yes, it takes place within The Boys universe. Yeah. The first season took place before the most recent season of The Boys. This season takes place immediately after the most recent season of The Boys. So, as I said, it's a bit like the MCU. At this point now, you need to have done your homework before you get into it.
Yeah.
Obviously, the MCU is a 20 plus movie. I don't even know how many movies there are, but 30 easily, right? Along with multiple TV shows. So the lore there is much more meshy, is what I'm going to use. And here, ultimately, you know who are the goodies, you know who are the baddies, because it's all signposted very clearly. I guess my only thing is, it's not original at this point, right? Like, as in the kind of sardonic, tongue-in-cheek superheroics I have now seen in X number of seasons of The Boys and in the cartoon spin-off and in Invincible, which is doing exactly the same thing in perhaps an even better way. This time around, it is violent, it is crass, it is deliberately all those things, but I'm not surprised by it. So I would like it to shock me a little bit more than perhaps it's doing. But like, if you like it, you'll like it. If you have never seen it before, do you want to see people bleeding all over the place?
Yeah. And is there kind of a through line here of like what the story arc is?
Yeah. So in the first season, it was all about the mysterious goings on in maybe a secret lab of the university. And let's just say the secrets were blown wide open. And this season sees our superheroes returning to the university as part of the kind of PR machine. PR is a huge kind of part of The Boys universe and understanding, like, you know, who's doing what. So they're sort of stuck and unable to break free while also having, let's just say, a secret mission to complete.
Right. Okay. But it would be a spoiler to tell us what the secret mission is. Somebody's texting to say Black Rabbit is a pretentious load of ball bag. The baddies are like the two fellas from Home Alone, made it to episode 3, never again. says another texter. And somebody else points out the Slow Horses. Is that the fifth season, Horses is back this Thursday, which, of course, is fantastic telly. Right. Our last show is Dark City, The Cleaner. New episodes every Wednesday at 11 p.m. on TG Cahir, or you can watch the entire series on the TG Cahir player. Here's a clip.
Ah, it's me! It's me! It's me! I'm the Christchurch Cav.
It's me. Ah, it wasn't hard. And you were going to kill me?
No. No, no, no! That's the truth! That's the truth! I like to get to know people first.
Right, so you were going to kill me next week, is that it?
What do you want?
Joe Middleton, Day Custodian. I feel it.
You what?
That you weren't a cop, but this. This is hilarious. A cleaner. But you said serial killers don't have menial jobs.
Spoken like somebody who hasn't had to clean up the men's bathroom.
Right, okay. Funny enough, Dark City the Cleaner sounds like some sort of superhero jobby, but it's not that.
It is not that. Now, it's also not Dexter, is what I'll say. But okay. It is, you know, it's in a Dextery vein, right? So who we heard there was Cohen Holloway, a New Zealand actor. He's in every major New Zealand movie you've ever seen, Hunt for the Wilder People, Boy, all those. And he plays Joe Middleton, who's better known by his epithet, the Christchurch carver. And he is a serial killer going around Christchurch under the nose of the police because he's also a cleaning man in the police office. So he is going around.
Okay, good cover.
He's going around and is able to observe how they, you know, in what direction their investigation is going and steer clear of all of their attempts to catch him while also killing his various victims. And it opens with this great montage where you see him returning from work and going in and his wife, well, it's playing out as if his wife is in the shower and he's waiting for her to come out of the shower. And of course, he's a serial killer waiting to murder her. Now, all in, it's a very strange show because Dexter works on account of the fact that we are rooting for this anti-hero who is killing other killers, right? He's doing this Robin Hood justice vigilante style thing where he's killing off baddies. Whereas I'm a bit unclear about why we're supposed to root for this guy because he is literally just murdering young women in Christchurch, which is a very bizarre thing to try and get your hero, your lead of a show. And like, let me tell you, he murders multiple innocent victims throughout this entire run.
Okay.
And you're sort of going, why on earth am I rooting for you? Now, who we also heard in the clip there was Chelsea Florence as Melissa, who is a bit of an anti-hero as well. He attempts, as we heard, get to know her better in a sense to try and murder her later on, only for the tables to be turned and her to be revealed to be someone else. Then a third murderer enters the fray when a copycat killer...
God, I'm never going to travel to Christchurch!
A copycat killer steals his MO and kills another victim, and he gets infuriated by this and tries to figure out who the copycat killer is.
Well, you would.
It is a very odd show in the sense, as I said, it's all about this literal serial killer who has no redeeming qualities and yet he is the anti-hero of the show. But it is going for a very black tongue-in-cheek humour. And most of the time it does achieve it. I will say it took me a while to acclimatise to its particular rhythm. I don't know if it's Kiwi humour or if it's killer humour. I'm not sure which. But eventually when I got there, I really liked it. Also, I will say, and I will warn anyone going in, there is the most graphic amount of full frontal male nudity I have ever seen in a terrestrially screened television show, and particularly brutal and violent ones. So know that going in.
Yeah,
that,
okay.
That caveat comes with, you know, any recommendation that you glean from this comes with that caveat. But look, it's a funny, odd little black comedy. Maybe you'll like it, maybe you won't.
Yeah, depending on whether you're like that kind of black humor and, of course, male nudity. Lola says in Black Rabbit there were a few absolutely amazing sign language actors.
Yeah, so Troy Kotsur is deaf and, I mean, he signs as well. He's non-speaking, so he signed his way through CODA to his Best Supporting Actor and he signs in this as well. And it works extremely well. It's very effective because, obviously, part of his menace is that he doesn't speak.
Ah, right. Okay, right. Those three shows are Black Rabbit. You can stream the entire series now on Netflix. Gen V, new episodes of Season 2 every Wednesday on Amazon Prime Video, and Dark City the Cleaner, new episodes every Wednesday at 11 p.m. on TG Cahir, or you can stream the entire series now on the TG Cahir player. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.